He's going to talk about some of the work that Dr. Kamprad did as part of a team on nitrogen. This work was, we thought was really important back when we were doing it, but really is a resurgence in interest in this work as of late. So, Bill.
Thank you, Dr. Camerato. Great pleasure to speak on this topic because this particular team was so instrumental in my development. And so I've got two pictures here, and Jim already showed this picture of Dr. Kamprad, but it's a perfect picture. And I just have one story that in later years, Jim and I became more like colleagues than student and advisor to both of these men. And we started playing golf with him. And this picture reminds me of his look when he banged a drive right down the middle of the fairway. And he had already knew that Jim and I were both off in the woods, you know, straight our drives. And he was very happy about that. And that was kind of a consistent theme about our golf games. This is Dr. Jackson on the right side. And he was my advisor, so he was kind of my father at NC State, and Gene was my uncle. So I'm going to comment on this team that they formed to look at nitrogen use efficiency and break down the components of nitrogen use efficiency, and then apply that principle and approach to looking at the issues and potential improvements of nitrogen use efficiency from management, soil fertility, agronomic management, breeding and genetics, and physiological perspectives. Okay, so kind of similar to Andrew's talk and kind of parallel with his theme of thinking about the themes of the day. Incidentally, I want to mention that since I've showed up on Friday and early Saturday, I've been trailing Andrew around as part of this executive board business almost every minute of the day. And I felt like, okay, I finally get a break from Andrew and I can go talk about it. And it turns out I'm right behind him on this one, too. Anyway, so Andrew showed kind of the background of phosphorus, same thing with nitrogen, a lot of concern for nitrogen in the environment. This happened to be one book on the shelf, but there were many, many people working on this issue back to the 70s, 80s. Jim Sheppers and others here have spent a lot of time working on these issues. This one I picked out just because it kind of hit home to what my particular interests were with respect to the soil-plant interactions regarding nitrogen use efficiency, and Jackson is one of the co-authors there. And you would think again, just like phosphorus, well, that we'd handle that by now and move on to the next issue, but here's the one of the recent better crops with plant food. Provided by Dr. Ty Maas, who is my postdoc, but the new nitrogen director with IPNI, and so she provided me with this and some other graphics to indicate that this is still a hot, very hot issue globally. So between water quality issues, now climate change, gaseous losses, price of fertilizers, still looking at trying to nail down the best possible nitrogen use efficiency and looking at it from soil plant process perspective. So here's the team, Kamprad representing agronomy and fertility, Dr. Bob Maul, stellar geneticist, quantitative geneticist at NC State and corn breeder, and Bill Jackson, the physiologist amongst the group, all working together. And as far as I can recollect, it was a fairly unique interdisciplinary team at the time. I can recall teams that maybe paired up two of these disciplines together to work on various nutritional issues, but three of them together, I can't identify a team that had all three. So that was, to me, kind of a groundbreaking effort in interdisciplinary work at the time. But then, if you think about where we are today with respect to interdisciplinary teams, we have formed these humongous interdisciplinary teams that cut across hard and soft sciences, you know, sociologists, economists working with agronomists and all the other agronomic disciplines, and working with the political scientists and so on and so forth, the engineers and environmentalists, to tackle these wicked problems. And this REACH project was one that we were fortunate enough to be part of, with climate change impacts on Pacific North Ag, West Ag, Northwest agricultural systems, involved over 20 PhD scientists over 5 years. So it's just kind of mind-boggling how far teamwork has advanced. So I thought reflecting on some of the dynamics of this small team might inform those of you that are forming teams, those of you that are early in your careers and thinking about what it takes to be in a good team. So a couple of things that I reflected on is, of course, the diversity of expertise is pretty essential if you're really going to do interdisciplinary, now transdisciplinary research. In this team, I thought Camproth was really the glue, and in fact, I found evidence that Maul was working with Camproth before Jackson group, joined this group. And they all had common goals with respect to the research goals. They had a shared sense of humility. They really did not bring much of an ego to the table, which I felt was pretty important as far as the team dynamics were concerned. They really enjoyed the process more than the credit. They were all great mentors to their students, and we all enjoyed being part of the underlying team under their leadership. They were all similar in age. You know, I don't think that's necessary for well-working teams, but it just seemed to click with them. They could all speak the same language and appreciate where they were in their career stages. They respected each other, enjoyed their company, and had a sense of cordiality and friendship. Although the one thing I can remember is they kind of disputed about politics, and Jim mentioning that Dr. Camproth died on election day, it just kind of hit me, because he was, you know, those of you who knew him, he was a pretty progressive liberal, and I just kind of thought, well, that's kind of ironic. So this is the paper I'm going to talk about, the NUE framework that they created, published in 1982 in Agronomy Journal, and they laid out this statistical approach and pretty simple mathematical approach to breaking down components of nitrogen use efficiency. And so here it is that, you know, they broke end use efficiency down into a utilization component defined by the amount of grain weight per unit of nitrogen in the plant. This has been renamed now. You'll sometimes hear people refer to nitrogen internal efficiency or internal efficiency. But it's the same factor. And then uptake efficiency, how well the plant takes up nitrogen from a given amount of nitrogen supplied. And then in that first paper, they also broke it down into some further components of grain and utilization, grain weight over nitrogen, which is just a flip of upside down of nitrogen concentration in the grain, and then nitrogen harvest index, which we're all pretty familiar with. And then they further broke down nitrogen uptake into distinct stages of crop growth of pre-plant, pre-silking, and post-silking to represent uptake during reproductive growth. Okay, so that was kind of the system. And just to briefly summarize some of their major conclusions of in this paper and in subsequent papers that we published, that the uptake components, or the components that represented uptake processes, were more important to correlate with hybrid differences in nitrogen use efficiency under high nitrogen supply. And then under low nitrogen supply, they were particularly interested with identifying hybrids that would actually do better under low nitrogen supply, which to people that are in the breeding world now, that sounds pretty familiar because everybody's after hybrids that are that do well under lower nitrogen supply in the name of sustainability. And so they found that this utilization efficiency was a more important factor defining genetic differences under low nitrogen supply. Okay, so that was kind of the upshot of what they did. Now, they studied these prolific hybrids in the mix, which multi-eared corn plants. So I just picked out one other article to talk about just because it's kind of my one of my fondest papers, because we published that 11 years after I left, and Jim was there a little bit longer, but it was kind of a long distance relationship, and back then we didn't have email, or you know, we traded drafts by snail mail and phone conversations, and you know, you'd wait 6 months and maybe you'd get one edit back from one of the four co-authors, and you'd wait some more and finally collect them all and then revise it and send out another one. It took 11 years, but part of it was that I think Jim and I just enjoyed continuing to interact with Camperth and Jackson, so it was kind of a fun activity. And the upshot of this paper was that by preventing pollination within these prolific hybrids at different stand densities, which is what Camperth's thing was, would alter this carbon to source to sink ratio, which affected then post-silk nitrogen uptake. So the less carbon available for roots to take up nitrogen, then you lower the nitrogen uptake. And so very simple measurements you make in the field and you can come up with these kind of conclusions. And so I thought this was a good conclusion to show the interaction of these three men, preventing pollination. That was the brainstorm of Bob Maul, that he would do this routinely in breeding programs, prevent pollination when he didn't want fertilization to occur. So he said, well, let's just alter the sink strength by putting bags on the silks, preventing pollination. Gene Camperth was very much into stand density relationships with nitrogen fertilization. And then Bill Jackson was interested in the actual physiological processes that you could attribute some of the results to. So it was kind of a cool test of the hypothesis that while multiple ears add sink strength and yield potential, the downside is that the sink strength imposes competition with roots for limited carbohydrates and therefore limited nitrogen uptake. Now, one of the things that came out of that work as Maul worked on other hybrids was that it found it could somewhat overcome that limitation in post-silk or reproductive nitrogen uptake with improved hybrids. So I did a little bit of bean counting because I wanted to really prove to myself that this was really a landmark paper. So I started looking at the citations and Google Scholar and Web of Science. You can see the numbers there, pretty impressive numbers. And I noticed in downloading the titles and some of the abstracts and some of the journal names that these papers spanned across multiple crops, languages. I counted 43 different crop species where this procedure has been applied to or at least referenced. a few tree species, model plants, so not just crop plants, but these genetic model plants, Brachypodium and Arabidopsis, the wild, ancient versus cultivated comparisons that you see in the literature, and now the old era varieties versus new era variety comparisons. So quite a spread in genetic material. Same thing along the management perspectives, that this NUE component analysis has been applied to tillage and residue management, various nutrients, so not just nitrogen, but phosphorus, potassium, even iron, various sources of nutrients, whether they're synthetic fertilizers, organic or microbial, and then the usual 4R kind of stuff, timing, amount, and chemical form. And then more recently, more of the environmental influence of soil characteristics and climate. So I graphed here some of the data on the number of citations, and this is not a cumulative graph, but it's the number of citations every 5 years. So you can see it started out kind of slow, and you know, if you can focus in on the 82, you can see that the genetics and breeding kind of got off to an early start compared to the other two, because that was really the focus of their papers. The physiology kind of caught up with that and exceeded it for a bit, and then the agronomy and soils kind of took off, and all three categories have increased on a per year basis now, so it seems to be even gaining a greater amount of citations per year now. So that's pretty lasting impact and legacy. Now, one of the caveats I got to point out is that this approach, they said, well, we're going to use nitrogen fertilizer as a proxy for total nitrogen supply in the calculation. So they were really calculating NF instead of NS, or the fertilizer supply. And so when they looked at plant N over the amount of fertilizer applied, that has to add up to something less than one if you're thinking that fertilizer is going to be supplying all or most of the nitrogen. But if that ratio is greater than one, then you have to say, well, nitrogen's coming from somewhere else other than the fertilizer, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be greater than one. And I look back at some of these papers, and that simple metric oftentimes was reported at about an average of two. For example, at 56 kilograms of nitrogen fertilizer applied per hectare, that number tended to be around two. So the plants were taking up twice as much nitrogen as was supplied as fertilizer. So obviously that assumption was somewhat violated by, and so I guess the main message here is that, well, even in those coastal plain sandy soils, and I can remember times when we had virtual hurricanes during the summer season, and so it was natural to think, well, you know, we're washing out most of the soil nitrogen, we have to keep supplying the fertilizer, but in actuality, there could have been, or probably was, quite a bit of soil nitrogen also supplied. This is a graph I like to show to prove that, where the amount of fertilizer recovered by N15, you can see the total amount of fertilizer that was recovered was actually a small portion of the total plant nitrogen that was recovered in this particular experiment in Pacific Northwest. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that terminology really matters. So, and it reflects how we think about the efficiency of systems. So in this one data set, you can see that at the bottom there, the N15 recovery, whether it's all fall applied or split, was ranging down in the range of 30% to 40%. But when you did the Moll, Capworth, and Jackson calculation, based on actual N supply, we estimated about 50% And then that ratio of NT over NF was actually well in excess of 100%. So terminology matters, and we have to be careful about how we talk about these recovery percentages, when particularly when we're talking to environmentalists, because they could get the misimpression that everything that's all the fertilizer that's not recovered is automatically lost. Obviously, the soil nitrogen is coming from somewhere, and it's actually recycling from season to season. So, terminology, a little bit of expansion of that discussion, and that's come to the forefront now, of how many different terms we have to define nitrogen use efficiency. There's a good website Bill Ron has supplied over the years from Oklahoma State that describes some of the delineations in these terms. IPNI also published a nice review article on the different terms as well. So in the blue then was the original paper, those diagrams definitions, and then we added the N supply ratios to try to get at the efficiency of uptake in later papers. And here's some of Ty Maz's work. We published a few papers in Agronomy Journal and Crops and Soils Magazine on some canola work where we broke down these components. And this is a look at canola responding under to nitrogen at different levels of water supply. And you can see that there's certain efficiency components that are more attributable to that increase in grain yield with the increase in water supply. This also led us to the kind of stunning conclusion that this UNR value, or sometimes referred to as the EONR value, is actually shifting for us in the Pacific Northwest based on water use or water availability. Okay. And it's quite a different number depending on the amount of water that's available and how vigorous the plant is. I wanted to relate to some of the recent analytics that have been conducted at Jim's institution by Tony Vinn and others, looking at this new versus old era varieties. And you can see that over time, in the comparison of a large data set, that this factor of grain yield over plant nitrogen has really increased with the new era varieties. Another graph that well illustrates this factor of NIE being higher with the new era varieties, but a little bit of a trade-off is that the grain nitrogen concentration obviously has to decrease with that. So if you're concerned about protein in some crops, maybe not so much corn is a big issue, but wheat, that comes into consideration when you're making those kind of trade-offs. Okay, so concluding then, this seminal paper has actually increased in citation impact over the years. You know, with respect to forming teams, choose your interdisciplinary teams wisely. It's just like forming a sports team, really. You got to have good team players and work well with others, and you know, you have common goals. So just beware when you get into this NUE game that there are these multiple nitrogen indices with different mathematical identities, and you have to keep all that stuff straight because there's no international standard for these terms. And even, as I mentioned, there even for the same mathematical definition, there's different terms. Soil nitrogen recycling and N-loss pathways obviously matter in all of this, so let's not forget that.
and keep looking for that nitrogen in the soil. No matter how deep you have to go, we have to go down to 6 feet. We've known that forever in the Pacific Northwest. Again, the new hybrids seem to have improved in NAE, but with this two-edged sword of lower grain protein. For the future, now and into the future, we're seeing more and more look at nitrogen balances and NUE analysis, not just on single crops, but to get at the heart of what's really going on with these systems, looking at over crop sequences, rotational NUE over landscapes, and even at regional scales. Okay, so I'll wrap that up and just show you a list of all the students that worked on this particular project, and all of them have gone on to really nice professional careers. We have any time for questions? No? No? Okay.